Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the New Art Gallery Walsall. I think we'll make a start. It's great to see so many of you here this afternoon. My name is Helen Jones. I'm the exhibitions curator here at the gallery, and it's been an absolute pleasure to work with Brian Griffin on the exhibition, The Black Country. We've had lots of fun and laughter kind of developing this exhibition, and it's been a real honour for me to work with an artist when they're developing such a personal project and to show it and bring it back home here in the Black Country. You'll probably be able to tell from my accent that I'm not originally from the Black Country, but I'm always keen to learn about the area, this part of the world in which I now live. And really, there's no better way to learn than through the eyes of an artist. And I'm sure that Brian will continue sharing his anecdotes and stories this afternoon for you all today. So it's my pleasure to introduce Brian to you all. And the talk will last for about 40, 45 minutes this afternoon. And then please feel free to ask any questions that you have. So I'll hand over to Brian. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for coming, action. Good to see you all. And it's nice that most of you are at my age group. It's great to still be alive. I mean, it's wonderful to still be alive. But you have to remember, I've passed through, after leaving the Black Country, I've been a photographer for 40 years. And I'm still alive. And that is quite an accomplishment. So, where do I start? I mean, the first thing that occurs to me is that what it was like, you know, what was it like all those years ago? And by doing some art piece or artwork or project, it gives you the opportunity to reflect back into your life. It's such a wonderful thing to be able to do, because one just goes on in one's life most of the time and one doesn't look back. But this project made me look back. And there are some of my friends in the audience here today, which probably helped me on this section of my talk, where, because we grew up together, we went to infant school together, we went to junior school together. And what did it look like then? I mean, I remember sort of helping the school bus get back, you know, from Alzheimer to Lye, you know, walking in front of it with a torch, or walking in front of my dad's car with a torch. I remember regretting being a photographer and not having all that fog and smog. I look at photographs, and I look at photographs of all that pollution, and it looks so wonderful. And I never had it as a photographer. I wish I'd have had it. And I just think of the plumes of steam, you know, going under bridges and coming out from under bridges and going along the landscape. Steam trains going up that long haul from Craven Heath to Old Hill, that bank, and struggling to get up that line. And I remember coaches, you know, leaving Lye, my mum and dad or my aunt and uncles from Hayes Coaches, and getting as far as the Horseshoe Pass, you know, in North Wales, and they couldn't go any further. They'd come back because they couldn't get around the pass. But I also remember, I don't know, never having a bath until I was 22. And it was incredible. And I remember my mum and dad never brushing their teeth all the time I lived at home. I can talk about that now because, you know, unfortunately, no longer alive. But I can never remember mum and dad brushing their teeth in 22 years of being at home. And I can remember, you know, like riding really quickly down our street. You know, and I remember all my friends. And I remember Stu Baker riding down our little cul-de-sac street and not being able to stop at the bottom and going head first into the brick wall, you know. I don't think they've ever been the same since, you know, it was Stuart. But all the things that happened, you know, catching hay fever for the first time, and old enough, coming back from my eyes streaming, and thinking, what the hell is this, you know, and having suffered from it ever since. And also, you know, breaking my wrist and my arm, riding my bike on the concrete surface at the top of that street outside Dalwell Engineering, and mum pulling on it to try and pull it back into place. You know? All those things, and they still remain with me in so many ways. You know, they have something go wrong with me. Everyone has things go wrong with them. And remember falling down some steps backwards 10 years ago at a party of mine, going to the toilet, and it was all full of blood, the toilet brush. You know, well, don't matter about that, really, was it? You know? And I think growing up in the Black Country, you became, and I built you as a certain person. And I would I'd look at everybody. I mean, horses delivered the bread, horse and carts delivered the bread, ex-army lorries delivered the coal with a coalman. Pop lorry would come down with a Corona pop. Go up to Mrs. Willits's every Wednesday with a little bowl to get my faggots. All these things stick with me, but I remember everybody and their humour, the way they'd explain things and the way they describe, and the comedians in the Black Country. How, you know, like, it was feeding my imagination, and I kept that. It was all inside me. Now, I want to just come along and move very quickly to just give you an idea how I started photography. I'll just start there. So there I was, I grew up in Stockley Street in Lye, and I passed an 11 plus. It was just incredible. I mean, obviously you see from the notes here. I remember picking the envelope up and taking it upstairs. My mum was in bed, you know, and I gave it to her, and she said, "Will you pass your 11 plus, Bri?" And I got past the 11 plus, I thought my mates are never going to talk to me again. And I was castigated for a few weeks after I first went to Alsley Technical School. I was in 41B, I wasn't in 1A, so obviously I am just about scraped through, obviously. Where was I? Yeah, and then I came 16, I got to 16, and you've got to leave now. So mum and dad just threw me out of school, really. I said, "Well, I'm going to stay at school, mum. I want to stay at school." And they just threw me out of school. They said, "No, you can't go to school anymore. You know, you can't do your A-levels. You can't do university. They've got to work. They need the money." You know, so I ended up in New Bank Construction in Mucklow Hill, which were a pressure vessel and boiler fabricating company, as an assistant draftsman. So I studied all my engineering, my ONC, my HNC. And one day I was in Rapid Conveyors in Lye, and you had to go down in the workshop learn how to weld and cut neck and things. And I was down in the workshop, and we were putting this big bearing on this shaft. I held onto the piece of wood, and the foreman got the sledgehammer, and it was going right there, and I was holding the piece of wood. And as he was doing a piece of wood with a sledgehammer to drive this pollard bearing down the shaft, he said, "Have you ever been interested in photography?" And he said, "Oh, you should be. I think you'd be really good at it." You know, as he was banging this piece of wood. And I sat down in the corner and had sandwiches that my mum had made for me. This is at Rapid Conveyors in Lye, off Stourvale Road. And is it Stourvale Road? I can't remember now. Where it was, off the A's anyway, and I joined the local camera club, and it was Hagley Camera Club, and I put my pictures on the, I was in the beginner's class, I went down to Hearts in Lye and got my first camera, and started to black out the living room, and learn how to develop my own pictures and things, and now I entered the camera club. You've got some examples in the gallery that Ellen's worked really hard to put together for our room there. And they were ever so kind to me all day, and they did laugh at my pictures, but they wanted to laugh at them because they were dreadful. But they sort of accepted me, really. But anyway, I marched quickly forward, and then I sort of forgot about photography. I'd take a few pictures, take some pictures of John, who's in the audience here. Take some pictures of me, better than me, than I took of him actually, which is something that follow room there John took with me and my mother. And I was going out with a Warsaw girl. Well, she lived in Aldridge actually, called Sandy Black. Is she in the audience, by the way? I haven't seen her for 40 years. She's a Warsaw girl, and I was so in love with her. I moved them to Coldmore Circus, worked in British Steel Corporation, and she was in the accounts on the 7th floor. I was in the estimating department on the 8th. estimating pipework for nuclear power stations and refineries and steam pipework, all sorts of pipework anyway. And I was in the local youth club in Stourbridge, and we went away for 10 days to Catolica. And when I came back, she'd run away with a manager at Lewis's department store in Birmingham. I was like devastated. I went up to Aldridge, which is over here somewhere, on the back of my mate's moped. And I was bursting to tears. She'd run away with him and left me. And I hadn't really been doing much photography at all, but then I thought, I've got to get out of here. I'm stuck on the 8th floor. I've lost my girlfriend. I'm bored. The only interesting thing that was happening to me at the time was, again, with my friend John, we ran a discotheque in, was it Wensbury, John?
Yeah.
In Wensbury. What was it called?
The Globe Hilltop. The Globe Hilltop.
The Globe in Wensbury. We ran this, what was our discotheque called? I've forgotten now. I can't remember.
What was it called?
Yeah.
Plum.
Yeah.
Plum.
It was called Plum, was it?
Yeah.
Right. It's called Plum. And, so there's only interesting bit of that in my life, really, and I thought, I've got to get out of here, I've got to do something. So I applied to photography college, and I stuck some pictures in a boots sticky folder, which is in the back room there. I applied to Guildford School of Photography, they wouldn't give me a place. I applied to Central Polytechnic London, they wouldn't give me a place, but Manchester did, which I learned at a later date that was they've got to make the numbers up. So I had to go back and get my O levels. And the reason I'm with Marshall London pretty quick is I want to get to a point now. So therefore I joined photography college starting in September. And the first project, the first year I have to do is photograph an egg in the studio. And I just put the egg down and took a picture of it, like all the others were doing. And they all looked at my picture of this egg, and they went, wow, that's incredible. And I went, oh, thank God. I've left home, I've left the black country, I've left the engineering, I've got an ONC mechanical engineering, I was in my agency. I've left my parents, I've left all my friends, I've left everything, I've my old girlfriend. I've come to do this, and I don't know if I really want to do it. I don't know if I'm going to be any good at it. And all the students went, wow, that's incredible. And I just, like, a sense of relief that flew through me was just incredible. But what, it's interesting because I was just from a little street, 90 yards long, and when I look back at it now, I might not have been the best photographer in that street. I just happened to be the one that found out I was going to be a good photographer by doing it. And I've always felt that. And I think that I've been able to get through all this all these years as a photographer, because what the black country has done for me. And essentially it's the humour. I think it's the humour in the way black country people look at things, the way they see things, the way they see the everyday. I mean, when the radio journalist came in here, when the exhibition first opened, she looked down at the bookends in there, she said, oh look, it's a little sausage dog. It was the bookends that I did in my first year of grammar school. She said, oh, do you like sausage dogs? I said, yeah, longer the better. I could come up with it like that, actually. It's because I grew up in a black country. Black country gives you that richness, you know, that you can look at everything and you can see something else in it. And I can't tell you how much that's helped my career, where I have to photograph fundamental things, but in my mind, they don't look like they are in reality in front of me. And that's what the black country fed me. Whether it was, you know, the old comedians that I listened to, or whether looking at Enoch and A-Line, the local paper, or just listening to my parents and the people down the pub. It just fed me so much that I could pull on, you know, in the future. And that's how I've got on in photography, really, has been, one, being able to crack wisecracks like that sausage dog, or being able to look at everything, like look at a chair and see a horse is one of my favourite things, really. Look at a chair and see a horse. So I can't can't tell you how proud and how pleased I am to have grown up over there. I know Boston wants to be part of us. I mean, we might accept them, actually. I don't know. As Tim Newey says, whose portrait's there, and then there says, the black country is where the black country monk says it is. And he's probably right, actually. I was going to say something about mum and dad, and I've forgotten what I was going to say about them. But anyway, so I reckon I was privileged. I had a head start. And after doing this project, I looked, because my mother only died in 2008. My father had been dead since 1985. I looked at the heirloom of all the snaps of both her sister, Evelyn, which I mentioned here. I realised that it was not only the black country, it was my mother who got all the talent and her sister. My mother and her sister had given me all my photographic ability. And I'd never realised that, or helped to assist it anyway. I never realised it until they were dead. It made me feel pretty sad, really, that I never recognised it as long as they were alive, that it comes from them, really. So, the black country boy, and goodness knows who was born in the black country, it's been very popular now, the black country, everyone wants to photograph it. There's two famous photographers who already started photographing it, but had never been here before, basically. Now it's getting very fashionable to be black country. So how did I get all this together? Well, I did a big show down in the south of France called the Royal Opening of St Pancras, all the workers and all the management and for the Queen, a book for the Queen and the Prime Minister and everything, at the opening where I speed one in St Pancras, which was shown in the south of France. Secondly, I did a book for an energy company in Warsaw called The Water People. The Rencontre d'Or is the biggest folk festival in the world, really. Everybody goes to it every July, August, September. And some people out from Paris went down there College des Bernardins. What do you reckon, Ellen? Des Bernardins?
Very good.
College des Bernardins, they said, we want you to work for us. We'd like you to do something for us. So I went over to Paris, and there's this beautiful 15th century college near the Notre Dame. And they said, we'd like you to do a project with us. We'd like it to be about the work, well, workers and work, really. And this is where you're going to show it. And they gave this beautiful chapel in Paris to house my exhibition. And going back to my talents as a draftsman, I measured every single square inch of that chapel and photographed every square inch of it and built the whole of this show to fit in that chapel. All its walls, all its crevices, all its doorways, fitted like a glove. I measured everything, and everything was printed to fit perfectly in that chapel. Anyway, they said, what you want to do? I said, and I thought, I've got to tell them what I want to do right away. I can't say to them, well, I'll go away and think about it, and I'll phone you up or I'll email you or something. I thought, I've got to make a decision straight away what I wanted to do. I said, well, I want to photograph my home, actually, where I come from in the 50s and 60s. I want to photograph my life as a boy, as a teenager in the black country. After I'd said that, I went, oh my God, why did I say that? It's the last thing I want to do. I never photographed my children, really. Never photographed my friends, really. Never photographed my wife, really, which I should do all the time. She wants to be photographed all the time. I don't photograph anything that's emotionally close to me. Maybe that's a black country trait. You know, you don't like to display one's emotions and one's feelings openly. So immediately they said to me, oh, that's great. I later learned that they really liked the word, the black country, and that's what they liked about it. And I walked away from that place thinking, oh my God, what have I done, you know? I didn't want to do this particularly. So I They said, well, can you write it all up and present to us what you're going to do? And I remembered seeing some photography over the years in France where the French are very open in their photography. They don't mind displaying how they feel, whilst all this English are all retentive and all philosophical and all conceptual and all tight and Victorian-y, whatever. The French don't care, they just display their feelings. And I thought, I'm going to do something where it really shows how I feel about things and be really open about it. So I wrote all this stuff down and I went back to see them. They asked to see me again and they said, I'm sorry, but we haven't got hardly any money to do it. The credit crunch has happened and we've been affected as much as anybody else. So I'd written it all up with a figure they'd given me when I first met them. And then when I went back, they said we've got less than half of that. And they said then all the expenses have got to come out of it, so it left me with very little money. But I'd already started to come up here and look around and through the kind help of Fred who's in the audience here from Dudley, art officer for Dudley, showed me around and stuff. So I was well into it, the project. And I hadn't got any money. So Fred helped me to locate some more finance there, and this gallery here helped to support me and helped to give me even more money. So eventually I had a reasonable amount of money to do it. But as the project went on, I had to spend all my own money as well, so I'm broke at the moment, so if anyone wants to buy any of these pictures, they're all for sale at the Michael Hoffman Gallery to help me not be so broke. It's just on the King's Road in London. I'll give you the phone number, no problem, I've got my business card sitting with a copy around the back there. So I spent all my own money on it as well. I didn't know when to stop writing a cheque. You know, I just like, well, that's going to be done, so to pay for that. All the hotels, I'd like to stay with two nights in the hotel in Merry Hill. Okay, the makeup artist and the actress wants to stay another night, so we need more pictures, all that, like a cheque for that. I just kept on spending my own money as well. And then eventually, talking about finance, I came back and Stephen Snoddy helped to raise, who's the director here, and this guy helped to raise more money to help finish the project off. So that's how it exists, through the generosity of both the College Des Bernardins in Paris and the generosity of this gallery and the people that work here and their hard work to raise money for them. And for, I'd like to say, David Owen, who's been incredibly helpful to make this project happen as an isolated example of a benefactor. There we go. So I'm going to start it, and then I thought, well, I want my mum and dad in it, you know, but dad's been dead, like, how many years since 85? 15, 26 years, whatever. And mum's not around anymore, but I want them both in my show. And I remember my Auntie Elsie saying something to me. Auntie Elsie is in the photograph in this corner here. She's my dad's youngest sister. She's 86. She took herself over to Paris to see the exhibition from Birmingham London Airport. And she said, oh, Brian, that looks just like a Jimmy. So I thought, brilliant, I could be my dad. I've got my dad, so I don't have to put a hotel. I'm going to stay at the hotel anyway, so I don't have to pay a hotel bill or anything. So I don't really expenses on dad, you know, and Roger just put me in a boiler suit or something, and it's cheap as chips, really. So I'm over there as my dad, I'll go through in more detail in a minute. And I had this idea that I don't think anybody had ever done before, where you remember your childhood and you just recreate everybody from your childhood, because they're no longer alive, maybe. Definitely, I think. So obviously this was a project that took a lot of effort in terms of trying to make it happen. And because it involved a number of people, which I must not forget this talk. So I had a great stylist friend. I've known him as one of my oldest friends, called Roger Burton. The first thing he styled, he was an assistant production designer on Chariots of Fire, if you remember that Hugh Hudson film in the early 70s. And then his next phase, then he did Absolute Beginners, Colin McKinnis' book, many, like a litany of credits. He runs a place called the Horse Hospital in London, if you want to look it up on the internet. And I said, Rog, I mean, you're as old as me, you know what it was like back then in the 50s. I'd like you to work on it with me, but I can't pay you. I could pay all the expenses and everything. And he worked on it through his generosity and wanted to be part of it. And then from him, I found a woman called Leslie Beestall, who was a top casting director. And we found pictures of my mother, obviously. I was going to carry my father. Then we found pictures of some of the other people here, especially worth mentioning is the Earl of Dudley from the National Portrait Gallery Archive. And we fed these to this lady, Leslie Beestall, who again worked for a print. She put it out all around the country to try and find my mother and try and find the Earl of Dudley, the Speedway Rider. So she came up with this lovely, lovely, incredible woman called Maria Bailey from Leamington Spa. And then from the National Portrait Gallery found the Earl of Dudley. And he happened to be a friend of Roger's called Calvin Coates, who's in the photograph, like two photographs over there. He's an actor and he looks exactly like the Earl of Dudley. He's almost a carbon copy. And then there was a heavy metal guy that runs the Middlesbrough Football Club website, and a heavy metal website called Steve Golby, who plays the central character there with a red feather in his hat. And of course there's my aunt and uncle Fred and Aunt Elsie. I think I missed them. And then Roger also, by sheer luck, knew somebody that would look like a early 60s Speedway rider, which is, again, a bartender and part-time actor called Victor, who plays the Speedway Rider. So, and then, so I had to photograph Steve Gold because he insisted I'd photograph him at some point or another, so I made him Guy Fawkes. My wife's on the far wall there because my mother absolutely adored her, and so she had to be in the show. So anyway, I've done some very big things in my life, and I've had some very big exhibitions, and I've been applauded in many ways, and you know, treated extremely well on some very big assignments. Now I was the solo man sitting next to the computer and the telephone. I had to go knocking on the doors myself and begging and that. So first stop was obviously come up to Lye, you know, where I grew up, on Stocking Street. And the first port of call was the last place in my father's workplace, my last place my father worked, which was Borough Engineering in Lye. So I knocked on the door on a green day and said, hello, my name's... I phoned up earlier to get an appointment. I said, hello, my name's Brian. My name's Brian Griffin. My dad worked here. Oh, Jimmy! Oh, Jimmy, oh, I know Jimmy. Dad hadn't worked there since 85, but Derek Norton, who's the CEO, chairman, managing director, over there, worked with my dad 25 years ago. Derek Norton's 72 now, I think. And then I went to the Black Country Museum to talk to them about the project. Then I was on a train going from Old Hill to Cradley Heath, and I was looking out the side window towards Cradley, and I saw this glowing furnace. I jumped off the train in Cradley Heath and walked round the back and found where this furnace was. The first factory I went into, they said, what are you doing here? Are you a gypo? I said, no, I'm not a gypo. I'm after a furnace. No, a lot of chippos, they can come around here and steal all that scrap of that, scrap, you know. They said, oh, it's Old Type down the bottom corner. And so I knocked on the door of Old Type and said, I'm a photographer. I'd love to you know, use your place as one of my locations. And they were extremely accommodating, as what a foundry was. But I found he took me around and said, "This, I think, this is Jimmy's old machine." And whole time they just said, "Yeah, come back whenever you're ready." It was so wonderful because, like, if you're in London, you've got to fill in forms, or you've got to go up through a layer of I don't know, rankings until you get to the top and committees or whatever. Here in the Black Country, just come along and do it when you're ready. It was so lovely. It's a bit like in Iceland, actually, so I spent a bit of time there. So the same in Iceland, people say, "Yeah, go along, just take some pictures, whatever you want," you know. It was so refreshing to work in the Black Country and the help and everything I was going to get. And so I came up and I'm just trying to think of the next stage. Look around. And then I went to this wonderful factory called Solid Swivel that still maintains making chain by hand. Fred Richings helped me to source this venue. I didn't know where to go, to be honest. Both my grandfathers were chain makers. One was a striker and one was the guy that holds it. So one grandfather was the guy on the left there. Well, he's not my grandfather, but that's what my grandfather would do. And my grandfather and the man holding the chain link on the right would wear my other grandfather would do. So I come from a background of chain making myself, so it's a very appropriate and poignant creating chain makers. My family, my father was born in Colligate, my mother in Mumbai. And so Fred introduced me to them, and they've been incredibly helpful, Solid Swivel. Unfortunately, from this show, they've been featured really heavily in the Guardian newspaper twice now. I think they've had 3 pages in The Guardian over the last 6 weeks, which is fantastic. They make a chain for the Royal Navy, which is wonderful, I think. I'm not sure what it is, actually, but it's good for workers, I suppose. Now I've got to think about what to do. They tell me they've got no money, college. Right, everyone's helped me to get a little bit more money to make it do, use my own money. But I know I've got to cut down what I was going to do, but budget's half or just over half, so I've got to cut down what I'm going to try and achieve. And I think, how can I do that? So I think of 2 things to do. One, I do a body of new material, which I'll point out as I talk about pictures. And then I use some of my old material, which has actually made this exhibition so much richer and so much better. So I used material that were inspired by growing up in the Black Country, by referring back to circumstances in my life, and like father's death, or the church I sang at as a choir boy, or musty old painting in the corner of the library. I decided to do that. And then I decided that every single photograph, unless they were just a series, would be framed differently. So every single frame in this exhibition is handmade, hand-stained, and has a different contour, or different coloration to it, or different wood, whatever, than anything else. So I wanted to look as if I'd said, "Hello, John, can I have that picture I gave you a few years ago for my show? Or hello, Mr. Museum in Essen, Germany, whatever. Can I have those pictures back for this show?" So I probably didn't quite achieve it, as you know, look around, but that's my attitude to it. But that's something I've got to come across. So here we go. I've got to plan everything, I've got to find the hotels. I'm a one-man band, I've got to organise all the travel, all the rail tickets for everybody, all the hired equipment. Then things, because I was so positive about the project, things started to happen. Leica phoned me up and said, "Brian, we've got this brand new camera that's just come out. We'd like you to take it off on the road and tell us what you think about it." It was a new Leica S2. With the 2 lenses and the body I had, it was a £30,000 camera, which is like just a dream. I couldn't possibly ever remotely afford it. Then a laboratory phoned up and said, "Brian, we've had this big printing machine come. You've probably seen it in the photographic press where they've lowered it down through the roof of our building because it's so big. we'd like you to do a print on this new machine. Well, I said, I'm happy to have this project, playing this print behind again. Happy to have this project, and they sponsored the print, so I had one of the world's best cameras, and I had a big print in Vermont, free. So then I've organised everything. We all stay at the hotel in Maryhill, and we all come up, happy bunch of brothers sort of thing, and then people start coming from here, there and everywhere as we program each day, and people arrive by train, and one of my assistants, John McQueen, was very generous, picked them up from New Street Station and brought them to Lye or Dudley, wherever we were. And it worked like clockwork, actually. I had a fantastic assistant called James Lindsay, who was really exceptionally talented, comes from Solihull, another Brummie. And we had a young girl from Birmingham City University, who just left Birmingham City University. She got the prize, that whoever got the prize from me at Birmingham City University Photography School could accompany me on this project, and I would pay for them to go to Paris. There was a young girl called Becca. She was a wonderful, wonderful second assistant. She came to Paris for the opening. And I started it. I started with this photograph here, which I don't understand in a way. Why I was in Arles, went to the Arles Festival last year as well. I was walking with Martin Parr through Arles, and there was this woman called Emma Chakuti next to us. And she said, "What are you worried about, Brian?" I said, "I can't afford this special effect. I was going to photograph my mum with a glowing iron bar in her hands." Well, the actress was going to wear a bar in her hands. "And it's going to cost me, for that glowing iron bar, nearly £3,000, you know? I can't afford it, really." He said, "I'll pay for it, no problem." "Oh, well, thank you. You know, just send it." Just like that. Just send me an invoice, I'll pay you next week. And with the iron bar, which is basically light in a fiberglass structure, like an ingot, came, I wanted to do a picture of oil, so we had these big canisters of molasses, food molasses. And then a studio in London was doing a special offer during August. It would be like half price. So I booked it for the day, studio. And this lovely lady, actress Maria Maley, came down from Leamington Spa. And it was originally going to be a triptych, this was. But eventually, I've still got two to show. I just used this one. Basically, all she's done is like dip her hands in this big bowl or canister of food molasses and brought her hands up. And I've caught her just as she's just touched that point. There's still loads falling from her hands. All my lights were sponsored by the Flash Centre down the road here in Birmingham, which is very noble of them. And Broncolor, which is just from Newcastle the Lion, they sponsored me some more lights. So I had tremendous assistance. And I was trying to figure out why I was getting all this help. And someone said something very simple to me, actually. And they said, "Well, of course they know it's going to turn out all right," or something like that. So I thought, well, that's maybe why they give me the money then. So I couldn't quite understand, you know, I was still quite humble about it. And, so we started off, first day was in London, in the studio. Roger got some 50s house codes, which some of the ladies here, I'm sure, can remember. And we did a triptych. And she's in a different house code in each triptych. Her hair was styled like my mother, the hairstylist Claire. She looked at my mother's picture and did the hair quite similar to how my mother was at that time. My mother in her 30s, maybe late 30s, early 40s. And we got the first picture, which we were delighted with, to be honest. I was really absolutely over the moon about it, though I say myself. So we got started, and then we've got to come up here. And up here I had some great help. I had Pete James at the Central Library in Birmingham, who was of great help to me, really, making this happen, which I have to thank him for. And I had Fred Richings down there at the back here, who was great assistance to without their help, like any project, it just flounders. You need the right people. And a lot of the time, by good fortune and good introductions through friends. And so we came up, and we got a complete itinerary. We got maps and where we would go. We knew, everyone knew exactly where they were going. We got a van full of lights and cameras and stuff. And we started. The first picture, can I remember what it was? I'm just wondering if Jane's in the audience actually. Oh, there she is. Thanks for coming, Jane. So we go to Holtite Engineering in Craven, on the edge of Craven in Craven. And I've been speaking to my friend Roger, who was finding all this stuff. And he said, why don't we do something involving our, when we used to go to the cinema, the Clifton in Lye, and see the Lone Ranger and David Crockett in that children's programs on Saturday morning. So I said, why don't we do a David Crockett now? And thought about it. And Speedway is one of my first loves, it still is really. Is Chris Van Stratton in the audience, by the way? Wow, Chris, well done. I'm nervous now. So the two heroes were Lone Ranger, David Crockett, and Craig Leithen, the Speedway riders. Can you imagine what it was like in when the first meeting was I went to 1959, October 59, drove by Mark Parker. Craig Speedway had been running then since, I think it was either 52, 53, whatever. It had been 7 or 8 years since Speedway had run Craigley. My dad and mum took me because they used to help run Craig Sports Club in the late 40s, early 50s, which you've seen the pictures over there, my parents and that, at Speedway. And walking over the pit banks, Craigley, in the dark and everything. And I don't know, or in the grey afternoon, or grey evenings on Saturday, and you see these men all in black with their chrome jack motorcycles, and the sound and everything. For a young boy of 11, it was just unbelievable. And 12, it was so dramatic. And I went to every single, I was always first in the stadium, I went to every single meeting all the way through to 1969. Art College, and then spasmodically thereafter to be closed. And so I said, well, those are my 3 euros. So I had this idea, why don't I make all 3 euros the same person? So we combined the Speedway ride into being the Lone Ranger, and also David Crockett to be the Speedway rider. And it's all one complete entity instead of breaking them up into three separate. Because to me, they're all equally important to them. Certainly at that point in time in my life. So then I studied this painter called Zurbarán, this wonderful painter of my all my career really. And so we decided to take, originally we were going to take the picture at the Black Country Museum, but things went a little bit awry there. So we decided to start with the Lone Ranger David Crockett down Holtite Engineering. We walked down amongst in the factory there, and we started setting it all up and the lights up and everything. And Jane had been incredibly helpful, so I went up with Jane up because this show is about a working woman essentially. It's the thread that passes through it, dedicated to probably my mother, I don't know. But so I said, Jane, come on down, be in the picture. And she was a great sport actually, and she came down and posed next to the Lone Ranger. She posed next to David Crockett. That was our first day, and we couldn't achieve anymore. But we got to go and shoot the Speedway in the middle. We tried it at the Birmingham, at the Black Country Museum, and because of the restrictions there and things, and the pressures, we didn't pull it off. Instead, we transferred to Borough Engineering in Lye. And the machine behind the Speedway rider is the machine my dad worked. My dad's machine. And the pose of the Speedway rider is exactly the pose of this particular figure in the Zurbarán painting, very famous Zurbarán painting. Actually copied the figure in the pose of the Speedway rider. And then we had some great help from Andrew Hale, who runs the Bruce Pennell Museum. lent us the plated body collar, and he lent us the helmet collar and the helmet. And then Lewis Leathers in London, who were very close to the stylist Roger, lent us the leathers. And he's meant to be an early 60s speaker. It's triptych. And as you know, triptych is almost like hang in a church, in a cathedral. That's what it's designed to do. Hang in a place, and maybe one day it will. But that's what the Speedway. And then we just see, I don't want to bore you too much. I'm sure I like that much. How long have I been going?
About 45 minutes.
Maybe
another 5 minutes and we'll take some questions.
Okay. So I'll just go another 5 minutes. I'll go on to something down the end there. My show opened in Birmingham, as you know. I had 3 exhibitions in Birmingham last year. On the morning of the opening of it, I had a phone call from Paris saying, "We've rejected most of your pictures. Can't use any of the pictures you've shown." Well, they said, "We can use some of them, but most of them we can't have." I said, "Why not? What's wrong?" He said, "We can't show them." The committee that run the college there said they've censored them all. This one was censored. The Black Country Food was censored. I can't remember all of them. I mean, 5 of them were censored and I've got nothing. I said, what am I going to do with them? I went over to Paris to talk to them. And I spoke to the president there, and he said, "I'm terribly sorry dragging you all over here, Brian, but they hadn't shown me all your text, so I hadn't got the context of the whole show. If I'd have seen it earlier, everything would be fine." And they said, "Yeah, there's no problem with anything but one." I said, "Which one's that?" And they said, "The Vicar." That's the Vicar of Wordsley down the corner there. "We can't have that." So, unfortunately, Gary, the Vicar of Wordsley, couldn't be in the exhibition. But everything else got through. And so, fortunately, Rob, I can see Rob here, and that, then the two vicars here in the audience today, which is great. They were so accommodating up at Sedgley Church. And I'll talk about the main one here, or two pictures along here, which are a bit more complex. What I wanted to show was, this is taken in Borough Foundry. On the left is Derek Norton, who's the managing director of Borough Foundry, and it's based upon a famous painting by Caravaggio called The Card Sharps. The left, again, sort of keeping the theme going, the inspirations going. On the left is Derek Norton. He's got his business cards in front of him, Borough Foundry's the cards. And the back there is Steve Golby playing Guy Fawkes. I was always fascinated with Guy Fawkes when I was at school up here, because he finished in Stourbridge in King's Swinford, the compound plot really, where Catesby was shot by the Sheriff of Worcester's men. So we've got Derek Norton, who is now and related to my dad. It's my dad's factory where he worked. We've got Guy Fawkes, whose life ended in the early 17th century. And then on the right is the Earl of Dudley, where I used to feel that like everything that I looked out the bedroom window was owned by the Earl of Dudley. And if we go right the way back down to the far end there, I call it Heaven. The one on the right there. Well, I took that picture in early 2009. I've been dying for an opportunity to show it. So I built it into here. It made it work in this exhibition by writing that little phrase about the orchestra, about the tenor, the sopranos, and the basses. My uncle painted a steel at Lysandry Works. And there's that there, which is Heaven. And then the Black Country Humour comes out by the cat's tail down the far end there, Mackie. I used to fight with that cat, number 9, the auntie's cat. And he used to scratch me, and I used to hit it and things as a little boy. And I built that sculpture of his tail and photographed it. Can you think of any comments?
What about Gladys Leary?
It's really funny, people's favourites, isn't it? The girl I helped Roger style all these characters here was Heather. She doesn't want anything with any characters. characters. And Helen here, her favourite, is Gladys Nui, isn't it? That one down the corner there. Well, my mum and dad, I think they used to pay either 6 shillings or 9 shillings a week rent on number one Stocking Street, or month, whatever it was. And Gladys Nui used to drive the Pikelet van, the light Pikelet company, but she owned my mum and dad's house. And she'd come and she'd be dressed exactly like a man, with a man's haircut, man's clothes, shirt, tie. And we lived in this little 9 foot square living room, and she would lean over and I'd snuff, stonk, snuff. And all of her nose here was all that brown. Oh, God. I could see her coming down, you know, coming down to down the back fold. Down the back fold. And just another thing. Anything else? Highlight.
What about Natalie, the female chain maker?
Well, again, a bit of half an accident in a sense. I mean, through Fred Richards and through. Fred, you have to help me. Perry, through the. Luke Perry. Because I'm talking, you know, these people's names. Luke has great assistance and helped me tremendously to get this organised here. His girlfriend came along as well, who I met, because she makes chain up in a museum up in Mushroom Green. And a really interesting woman. And we, after we finished this, what happened? This is the interesting one, actually. I went and I said, look, Luke, I'd like to come on the Friday afternoon, set all my lights up and everything, get myself all prepared, get a camera position, everything, get totally worked out, and then come up on a Saturday and take a picture. And I said, can you get some of the chain makers for me? And I said, yeah, no problem. We found them for me. And I said, look, Luke, I'll give them a print each. Each of them, I'll give them a print. And they said, no, I don't want a print. You want £30 an hour. £30. I said, do you realise I'm a professional photographer? I've sorted out all the lights, I've sorted out all the camera position, I've sorted out all the exposures. You're just going to come in there and you're going to be away, you know? So I knew exactly what I want to do and exactly what I've got to achieve. They were all out in an hour. So they had £30 each for being on this picture here. And they could have had a print each. And I really like it, actually. I really, really liked it. I didn't think they were daft in a way, but still. So we did that, and then we went just over the way, about 12 feet, and in the afternoon, we photographed Natalie, which, you know, is my mother, an old black country woman, and now we have a future black country working woman, which is great, actually, two members of the spectrum. And just as, before I finish up, I'd just like to mention Tim Newey down the end there. That was really difficult. So I've known Tim and I thought, well, how can I photograph Tim? And I had to use an old technique. I don't know if there's any photographic students here. Sometimes a good old technique is to let the person you're photographing, one of my techniques as a portrait photographer was to make them think you don't know what you're doing, make them think you haven't got a clue what to do. And then they come up with something that you could never, ever think of. And I went, God, Tim, I don't know what to do about this. I don't know how to photograph you. You know, I have no idea. He said, well, I'm an organist. We went like that. And I make faggots. And so I've got a faggot. I'm going to get a faggot. And I put it on top of his hand. And you know, so he's got his faggots. And he's got his fingers on the organ. Is there anything else you need to mention? The sliced bread. Just the last thing, yes? Why did I photograph sliced bread? Well, Dad died, and Dad wasn't smoking right then. Dad died with all his lungs caked up with cast iron dust and stuff. Died of lung cancer. And the first thing that occurred to me was I know what's the most horrible thing is Wonderloaf. So I just bought some Wonderloaf and got my friends, actually, my male friends, I put Wonderloaf on top of their backs in my studio in Rotherhithe in London. He did a series of pictures of Wunderloaf or Mother's Pride on top of men's backs. That was inspired by my father's death. There were some other pictures were inspired as well, actually.
The soldiers.
And then at the time I was doing Broadgate, which was a massive development in the city of London next to Liverpool Street Station. About a quarter of the city of London was demolished to built this big property development in the mid-90s. And the property developers gave me some of the amount of money to do a project of my choice at the building site. So I just got all these tradesmen, lay them down with their tools, like knights in a cathedral, with their swords, really. And that I did both sets of pictures after the death of my father. So that's the reason these are in the exhibition, because they're inspired by my family. And as I said, Lenny the Worker, first one down the bottom there, was inspired by being a choir boy at Rye Church and the war memorial outside.
Maybe we should see what other people want to find out, or maybe if anybody's got any questions.
Yes. I've always found that really difficult, how much light to put in the eye. You know, use a top light to come down, and then put a honeycomb light onto the face, just to bring it out. Honeycomb just narrows the beam of the light and hits it on the front of the face at a lower exposure than the soft top light coming down on it. It gives her a bit more enigma, more mystery, more, you know, you can't quite understand what's going through her mind. It makes it far more fascinating. Yeah, she's only not very old, is she? 35, 36? Was taken in a photographic studio. That was and just you know, my lights, my flashlights.
Is that what is your favourite camera?
When I first started, or when I did this?
When you first started.
As a photographer, when I was a teenager, Praktika 4F. Cheapest single lens reflex. I had mine when I was 17,
No, I've got a Bronica. I've really got a Bronica.
I've got Mamiya's, Hasselblad's, and Phase One camera. Real life. so I have to get the begging bowl out every time I take mine. I've got a very good camera, I've got phase one, 30 plus, which is pretty up there. But the Leica is probably 40 odd megapixels, around about 40, 40 plus megapixels. Plus the optics are just mind-blowing, of course. But it's to do with the light, like the quality of the image.
Yeah, there's another question over here.
I think the question is just an observation, but what you were saying about just about pointing the camera. When I was a small boy, I was watching Blue Peter. Tony Armstrong Jones on there, he had a photograph of the same thing of one place, one done with the box camera and one done with this professional one. So the only difference is that the definition was different. He said, what you have got to do in all photography is to ensure that you have your composition right and that you get atmosphere into that photograph. And you say, well, you wish what you have been saying all this afternoon.
Absolutely, it's vital. I mean, composition is vital. I think I inherited composition from my mother. I'm not certain, but if you look at a couple of the pictures in the back room and that, my sense of composition is fantastic, especially the one with the feet and me in the distance with the boy. Fantastic image, picture. I don't. Well, I'm not going to say I don't even know how long this. And there was a friend of mine telling me, actually. But he's right, composition is important, really, really vital, actually. Vital. And injecting atmosphere. You know, you could have those four guys there, every camera and photograph them. And it would look okay, but with some injected the light in there, it's giving it so much more power. And I mean, composition's important with photography as well. It's what you can't, like the gentleman asked about the eyes, it's what you don't see, with the shadow, what's in the shadows. It's vital in photography, it creates the mystery. The human mind wants to, what's going on in there? What's happening? You know, it's intrigue. It's intrigue. Area.
You see, I say that because as a photographer, you are at a disadvantage to an artist who can paint the scenes onto a canvas and bring that atmosphere out.
Yes.
Is it taken with a digital camera or an ordinary camera?
It's taken with a high resolution digital camera. Yeah, I look at a computer, have a computer. But there are pictures here, obviously the slice films film. You can see the film ones as well. Yeah, there's a number of film pictures here.
It is really digital rather than film. It must be easier to digital now than with film in the old days.
Yeah. Because you had Polaroid, obviously we had Polaroid, so we knew it would come out. But now we can see the image that we've taken to see if it's what we want, you know? But before, it could go, you know, you never saw most of the pictures you've taken until you processed them.
Yes, I think Dr. Griffith told you something like that with one or two scenes of the digital, probably, not such as much.
Anyone else like that? That's how I work. Okay.
Since you're working in language compared with composing, how much is post-production like?
Nothing really. I'll tell you exactly. The highlight down here was a bit stronger than, you know, taking it, just like printing, you know, burning in or whatever. Printed that down a little bit there, a little bit there. A little bit the side of the face, just down a little bit. That's all really. Because he was, I mean, nothing's photoshopped, nothing is streaked in or put in. Like, I can't live in myself. It's just my rules. first definitely. I was glad to get out of that place. I cried when my dad drove away after dumping me in Manchester with Art College. I had put a few tears in my eyes. But when I left Manchester, I had a few tears in my eyes as well. And I had no great I had a great desire to come back and live in the Black Country, because I knew my future was down in London. In fact, they still write about that in photography magazines now, is that the future's in London. I was reading about it on the train, magazine, this month's magazine, but that magazine. But yeah, I didn't do it because I lived there anymore. But when I look back now, when I see the destruction of the area, it makes me cry, honestly. I mean, it's a wonderful place, it's great to look at, actually. Sorry, the gentleman was asking, was that the same?
No, sorry, I was probably just waiting in.
Somebody else was hanging. Hi.
You weren't told to translate in with reference to the Icelandic landscape, which you were very slow in recording, but the subject didn't speak to you. Unless you can have a conversation with the subject, you were not motivated to photograph. Could you remind me?
You mean a human subject or landscape or?
Well, I believe that you took some years to photograph the Icelandic landscape, and your reason for not doing it was because the subject didn't talk to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, when I first got married to an Icelandic woman, she took me to Snæfellsnes Ness, where in during the centre of the earth they went down from the volcano and came out of Stromboli off Italy. And I read Journey to the Centre of the Earth by Jules Verne, and I thought of a project. I thought, well, I'll photograph the Icelandic landscape as if it's under the earth. Setting yourself a typical project, that was. And of course, I couldn't basically do it, really. I mean, I did one picture, it's called Sullivan's Foss in my book, Water People. It's one picture. But essentially, I couldn't do it. And what put me off a lot is that everyone photographs Iceland. Have you been there yourself?
No.
Well, you just go like that is perfect. It's wonderful. You know, that looks wonderful. A monkey could take great pictures of Iceland. Perhaps I am a monkey. Because I've taken some good pictures in Iceland. That's black on try. Well, I used the water machine, and that was from the Black Country. Have you got the book then, The Water People?
No.
No, you haven't. Okay. I invented a machine called the water machine in the 80s, where you photograph through a sheet of glass and it creates these water structures. That's another thing.
Any further questions?
Yeah. But I wanted to be a fashion photographer like David Bailey or something. So I thought, well, I've got to make my way here. So I had to find a new way of seeing the most boring side of photography, because it was regarded, really, business portraiture as the bottom end of the photographic spectrum, or whatever, the bottom layer of professional photography. It was the worst one. It was like, you know, no one wanted to do it. So I had to approach it in a new way, you know? And it took me about a year to come to the point, well, I won't go into all the inspiration, as well as painting, literature and stuff. And I thought, I'm going to make these businessmen my actors, and their offices are going to be my stage. So I started to treat it like that, and I developed a new way of photographing business people. And then everybody wanted a bit of me there, because I had a new way of doing the most boring photography. So everybody wanted me then, and then as the 80s came along and Thatcher came into power, when it came to the annual reports of companies loaded with money, they wanted the man who was the most famous in the business world, photography business world. So they all used me again, you know, for sheer good fortune.
So, do you think really it's about finding what you really are?
You've got to be different, really. I mean, I don't know today. I think photographers who do event photography, wedding photography, photographs that go on people's websites, I think they're the hardest working photographers, where there's a lot of work around. For people at my height in the industry, there's very, very little work for very top photographers in the industry. Very little. Because people don't want to pay, you know, a lot of money to employ photographers anymore. They prefer to pay little. Because photography, you can get it right, can't you? You can pick up your digital camera and go out perfect every time. But back in 73 or 74, we could come back with a blank roll of film, you know. Or out of focus or whatever, whatever. So. Anybody else? What would you like to do next? Well, I'd like to carry on from where I've left off here, really, and develop my pictures up even higher, get them even better. I was talking to Helen at lunchtime about, I don't know how many years I've got left, you know what I mean? I'm 63 now. How long when the brain's going to give up, you know? So I've got to get on with it. But the trouble is, I've put myself in a bit of a corner where, you know, like, instead of having a camera around my neck and just walking out into Warsaw and just using my shoes, I've got like all these trappings to do these pictures that cost all this thing. So I can't really go out very often unless I get like support, you know. So I'm doing Marseille Provence 2013 is my next date. They're the capital, is it called capital centre of culture? For European capital culture?
Yeah.
European capital culture 2013. I'm doing an exhibition there. About the automation of the container port there, where they don't use human beings anymore to do anything. So it's the death of the worker, and it's going to be, and they want 10 pictures that big. Boy, so that's my next thing, and then it's the Library of Birmingham, isn't it? Then the new library they're building in Birmingham, the workers, the management, and the top project managers building the library in Birmingham. And then it's like exhibitions and things. And there's my t-shirts are coming out in 3 weeks' time. The t-shirt site opens up in 3 weeks' time. 3 weeks' time, 70 t-shirts out of all my pictures. You're not on there, Jane. Which one, Jane, which one do you want of you? Do you want to be with the Lone Ranger or David Copperfield?
Well, Brian and I will stay around for a little bit, so please do come and ask us any questions that you've got. There's also an opportunity to buy a signed copy of one of Brian's catalogues from his retrospective that he had in Birmingham last year, and those are at the back of the gallery. And at 3:30 today, there's the Young Street Dancers in the foyer area of the gallery, so do go and have a look at that on your way out as well. I'd like to thank you all for coming this afternoon, and also like to thank Brian as well.